Hey, Scaredy Cats, we have 1 week left in our July contest to win that horror hoodie. All your favorite bad guys. Who do we got on there, Dave?
We got Ghostface.
Uh-huh. We got Chucky.
We got Freddy Krueger.
Freddy's on there?
Yeah,
Doc. Oh, my God. I got to enter this thing.
We got... who's the little dude from Trick or Treat?
Oh, Sam's on there,
Sam's on there.
Oh, my God.
You really look at this hoodie, guys. There's a lot on it.
And it could be yours.
It could be yours. You can enter our contest real easy. Head on over to Twitter. It's going to be our pinned tweet. Gives you the information there. You're going to get entries, mm-hmm. multiple entries for iTunes reviews. You're going to get entries for retweets, follows, and likes. Classic
Facebook,
social media,
Instagram. Yeah. We just want all your likes, and that iTunes review. I really want to emphasize that mm-hmm. because that you get 3 entries for.
Yeah,
and you can't just check the thing. We can see if you did it or not.
Yeah, we know.
Yeah, don't try pulling that shit.
We're watching. So let us know what you think of the podcast. Like, retweet, follow, and this amazing horror hoodie could be yours.
Could be on your back soon.
Killers, demons, ghosts outside, screaming you can run but you can't hide. You can't scare me, I'm already dead inside.
Hey, Scaredy Cats, and welcome back to your favorite horror movie podcast, the Tex Chris Dave Saw Massacre. Time to watch horror movies.
What are we doing this week, Dave?
Today, at long last, which I say that after... when we're gonna watch every
drummer's
sequel.
Getting frustrated here, his arms are getting tired.
Well, that's what he gets when nobody asks for a drum roll.
No, I know what you mean though. I'm also like getting conscious of we've done so many goddamn sequels this season mm-hmm. on Texas Dave Saw Massacre that there's only so many ways we can be like, finally we're watching the sequel to this, or like, oh, at long last.
Yeah, and I do want to like have that hype. I want to put it in because when we watched the first Demons, by the way, we're watching Demons 2.
Finally.
Woo! Finally. Yeah, see, we can't get away from it because when we did watch Demons 2, if you've seen Demons, go back and listen to our episode about Demons.
Yeah, don't start here. Go back, watch the first Demons, and listen to that episode. Yeah,
this one's pretty important for that.
Yeah, and pretty important for us. That one blew our minds when we did it.
I listened to it very recently, and you can tell two people's lives were changed in the time that it took for one chainsaw to start up.
Yeah.
It was amazing. We were both blown away with how exciting and amazing it was.
That was just such a wonderful, pleasant thing to experience. Like we had a feeling it would be a fun time, but it was just so joyfully exuberant.
We couldn't have expected the heights that movie would reach, and how funny and how much beautiful gore it was. Yeah. It had it all.
I mean, the bar is very high for a sequel to what that kind of movie is.
Yeah. And so, I mean, my hopes are not nearly as high, but I mean, like, I can't see this being anything other than just joy.
Yeah.
I'm pretty excited for it.
Yeah. And I'm trying to lower my expectations to be like, okay, well, you know, Demons was its own thing. This will probably have, more demons summoned by a mask or some way that they bring them back. And hopefully there'll be some carnage.
It's a TV broadcast in this one, right?
Is that what brings them along?
The demons from the first film invade the modern world through
television.
Yeah.
Awesome.
In an apartment building.
Fucking awesome. Yeah. All I wrote down was the log line. A group of tenants and visitors are trapped in a 10-story high rise apartment building infested with demons who proceed to hunt the dwindling humans down, which is
just awesome.
We love this. I mean, even just a few weeks ago, we did Dawn of the Dead. You trapped in a mall with these things. Mm-hmm. This is like a very similar idea. We're in one kind of larger building structure.
Yeah.
And we've got to deal with these demons, but not zombies, demons this time.
Yeah, so I wonder what they're going to do. Like, I think we might have a lot to say about, like, all the different apartments we're going to see and how it's been stylized in 1986, you know?
Can't wait.
I cannot wait to see apartments. That's going to be a lot of fun. I would never, ever have anticipated myself saying something like that.
Yeah.
But, like, man, when you're doing this podcast, I'm watching way more movies from the 80s than I would have chosen to on my own. So that being said, I get to see, like, going back and forth in my own time, I'm watching movies from the 2000s.
Yeah.
And then when we do the podcast,
you're not as likely to go check these ones out on your own.
Yeah.
That's not something you gravitate towards personally.
It's got to be a very, very special movie for me to do that.
Uh-huh.
But when we do the podcast and throwing out all these like classic 80s camp practical effects movies.
Yeah.
Like
The Gate. pieces.
Sure. Yeah. The the gate was so good. All those little weird demon things.
I like the gate. I think the gate is such a great horror movie that you can show like 12-year-olds and 11-year-olds. You know what I mean? Like it's not too scary, but it's just exciting enough.
Like the Faculty. Kind of
totally. I watch like Faculty at that age.
Yeah. They're colorful and palatable.
They're accessible. It's not gonna get under your skin too much. It's just a good time. That's kind of creepy and incredible effects.
Yeah, and it's like the gore doesn't like make you feel terrible or scared as a young kid. It's just gross, and that's a good way to feel uncomfortable in a horror movie.
Totally,
it's just gross.
Demons, a little darker, a little creepier,
a little bit darker.
Don't think I would show it to a 10-year-old.
Yeah, teeth pushing out teeth.
Uh huh. Like, I remember that. But gross. And even just the makeup and the eye contacts they had. I mean. So impressive. And we got, luckily, and another reason why I'm extra excited for this one is the Dream Team is back. Lamberto Bava is directing it again.
Yep.
And he co-wrote it with Dario Argento.
Yep, we got Argento. Yep.
So, I mean, like, is lightning going to strike twice? We'll see. They made this like a year or two after the first one.
We will definitely see. I listening back to our first episode, I gave so much of the credit for the direction to Argento. Like just 90% of it.
That's
like whenever something came up, I'm like, that's so Argento. Even though it's Lamberto Bava.
It is Lamberto Bava.
Yeah, I know. So I'm just correcting that for myself.
But Argento's there. He's a producer. He's on set. I mean,
he's
Bava,
around.
Even though he is the son of, you know, the director that influenced Dario himself, he still is probably going to yield to Argento on a lot of ideas.
Yes.
We can see his fingerprints all throughout that first movie. I mean, his daughter Fiore was in the first one, and Asia is in this one.
I'm pretty sure that word spells Asia.
Asia Argento.
I've been planning to say that.
This
since
has been
last
Dave's
night.
Pronunciation. Really? You're like, Chris is going to say it correctly. I'm going to correct him.
Well, yeah, I read it and I'm like, Asia Argento, I know that name.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, I normally would.
Yeah, she's been so much in the news the last few years because of all the Harvey Weinstein horrible stuff.
Oh, I would have mispronounced it had I not, had it just not come up a dozen times.
Did you YouTube Asia Argento pronunciation?
Nah, I didn't Google it, man.
Yeah, so like I've seen her in some of Dario's movies. Like she's
10 in this one, right?
Yeah, I think this is one of her first early ones. I think she is in Phenomena, like in just that crowd of girls. I think she's uncredited. Remember when we were watching that? I think you can see her there.
Mm-hmm.
But in this is her first one where she actually has kind of a full substantial role. And then she goes on to do a lot of her. Or a couple of her father's movies, at least. She's in Stendhal Syndrome, and she's fantastic in that.
Mm-hmm.
She's in Trauma, and I think she's also in Mother of Tears, which is the third or the second sequel to Suspiria.
So yeah, she's really woven into the history of those films.
Absolutely.
That's
it's
awesome.
A family affair.
Love that.
Yep.
Just great. So yeah, this one's going to be nuts.
We got nothing but hype for this one. We're so pumped. I mean, it's been on the calendar for a while.
Mm-hmm.
This Dave and Chris tree, obviously demons. We don't need to... That's territory. But name some of the scenes that are coming to your mind right away.
The teeth pushing out the human teeth.
Yeah.
Demon teeth pushing out the human teeth were just disgusting.
Uh-huh.
I know there's that part where the hand, like, all the demon, it's transforming into a demon, so it just starts fucking bleeding and the skin comes off and shit.
Oh, God, yeah.
Some of the effects I really think
of. Even just the setup was so exciting. Like, just, first of all, to have that guy with the mask.
The mask. It was like the promo thing.
Handing out the free tickets
to
the movie.
Oh, yeah, and then they go into the lobby of the theater and
the
mask
is
on the thing as promo material.
And the guy fucks with it and you're like, this isn't going to be good.
It's the cut on the face.
It's so, all of it is just so, so good.
Great setup. And of course, motorcycles and helicopters stand out crazily from that movie.
Yeah, like a one-room movie in like a movie theater. That's the setting.
In the seats and balcony.
Helicopter goes into the movie. Like it just exploded our brain. It was
so we've got like what must be a 20-minute sequence of a sleeveless dude riding around on a motorcycle with a katana chopping heads.
Oh my God. Up and down the aisles.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Probably like one of the best horror sequences to take place in a movie theater.
Mm-hmm. Oh, totally. It's amazing. That's going to rank with like Final Destination stuff and Scream.
Scream. I mean, Scream definitely takes from it. There's a 70s movie I watched recently called Messiah of Evil that has like one of the, you've probably even seen it. It's used sometimes in movie theater trailers before the movie shows of of a female going in, sitting down, eating popcorn, and then kind of ghoul zombie-like creepy dudes are just kind of filling up the theater. And then eventually she freaks out and tries to run away, and they eat her and they take her down, and her hand like goes up against the screen.
That's another
great movie theater moment that I feel like awesome. Scream 2 is really borrowing from or paying tribute to.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. But anyways, let's move on to our segment, Scare and Tell.
Scare and Tell.
What do you got for Scare and Tell this week, Dave?
This week, I watched a movie that appeared for me on Netflix called Delirium.
I love this because there are so many movies, like horror movies on Netflix that I'm always just like slightly interested in. Mm-hmm. And then more often than not, you jump on them, you check them out, which is such a great vetting process.
I don't even wait. I just put them on. I don't even know who's directed by it.
How was it?
Oh man, it wasn't stellar. It was, but also it wasn't perfectly terrible. You know, it falls in the middle. It borrows from so many things that I've now seen. Like it borrows really heavily from Martyrs. Mm. It borrows from Oculus. It's got like some like a zombie eye, like wingered feel to it. Like, but basically what it is Topher Grace. Has just been released from a mental hospital. And he moves back into his parents' house. His parents aren't there. He's under house arrest. And so he's got this anklet thing, so he can't leave the house. And there's a phone in the kitchen that will ring randomly and has a camera on it. So he has to pick up the phone, say his name, and then it'll take a picture of him so that they know he's still in the house.
That's his like parole check-in.
So that becomes sort of a like safety slash like problem thing. But if he doesn't do that, the police will come.
Mm.
So like that gets put in your mind early. Like the setup is very good. He's in this massive house because his parents were rich.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got this like big automatic like pool thing that opens. It's like super indulgent, but he sees shit and he has to take pills to like not see things. And then the movie is this drama of, is the house haunted or is he just seeing shit? And and then his old brother shows up, who he and his brother were like involved in some crime. He didn't do it. His brother did, but that's why he was in the mental facility and his brother's in prison. He shows up back at the house and then so does his brother, but he can't confirm whether or not his brother's real or if it's these hallucinations.
This is a great setup.
It is. And I feel like, man, if it was just everyone in it was unknown, nobody knew who anybody was. It was a little like lower budget because like it's all in this house and there's not a tremendous amount of effects.
Yeah.
It could have been like one of those, like, if you haven't seen this, this is really good.
Mm.
But there's something just pretentious about it that isn't perfect. They go for humor that doesn't quite work. I don't know if Topher Grace does well because I just find him so charming that, you know, he could say or do anything and it just feels so great. Like he's such a good actor.
All right. Yeah. Sometimes celebrities can be an impediment to like a great idea. I felt very much that way watching Mother, which you still haven't checked out, eh?
No.
Got to get around. And that one's on Netflix.
It is now. Yeah.
But same thing, like just because it's Jennifer Lawrence, I find that so distracting for some reason. Like just the star power is so overwhelming that I can't almost invest in her as that character.
I agree.
That would have been more exciting. And even maybe it's a testament to bad acting, because I feel like Javier Bardem disappears in that role, but she's just so obviously Jennifer Lawrence the entire thing, and it's a little distracting.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Jennifer Lawrence just like became a super celeb out of nowhere. Like, so she's done a few great roles, but I mean, they're all orbiting the same type of character.
Absolutely. She hasn't done anything really exciting in a while.
Yeah. I think her range is average rather than, you know, that's a good living way to put up it to the hype.
Yeah.
You know? So when you put her in a space movie, you put her in a crazy horror movie.
Totally.
She stands out.
You can give Julia Roberts, you know, a fun Southern accent, but it's still going to be Julia Roberts in whatever movie she's in.
Absolutely. 100%. That's how I feel about
it. And Topher Grace in Delirium was still, you're watching Topher Grace the whole time, not a character.
Yes, exactly. Like you never, like there's not a lot of movies where you see him that scared, and like he's got some precedent. Like he played a character like that in Spider-Man 3. Mm-hmm. Like he had a sort of horror, body horror sort of storyline in that. It was in Predators.
Right.
Like the 2010 one.
Okay.
I think he was like the,
I don't think I saw that. Crazy.
He's like the foresty one. They're all in the woods and there's a bunch of predators.
Aren't a bunch of them foresty ones?
Yeah. I guess Predator.
Yeah. And we have a new Predator this fall coming out.
It looks awesome.
I didn't watch the trailer yet.
Like the Predator.
Yeah.
I just love the image of the Predator's gauntlet hand holding the skull and spine of another Predator.
Cause it's like a super Predator in this one, right?
Yeah.
That's what I heard. Yeah.
which is awesome.
You're gonna go check that out, big screen?
Hondo P.
Nice. That just seems like the ultimate big screen movie to go watch, right?
Yeah, that's the best. Those are the kind of blockbusters we need.
Yeah.
Like alien slaughter movies.
Yeah.
That's fucking great. Don't take your time. Don't show me the slow buildup between our different races and how the meteor crashes.
No.
An hour later, you
get
see
to the
something.
Forest and start slaughtering each other.
Yeah. Why are we out in this forest again, Bob? Just looking for coconuts.
So how did Delirium like end for you? Was it satisfying?
I liked it overall, but I feel like I deserve criticism for that. I feel like a lot of people are gonna be like, just another one of those movies. Like it's like Bad Samaritan level, the David Tennant movie that I watched.
Yeah.
No one heard about it. Nobody like went out and saw it. I think looking at the box office on this one right now, it's like at like a few hundred thousand. Like, so I have to imagine they lost money. Although it's Blumhouse. But so it was Blumhouse in conjunction with, Appalachian, the Leonardo DiCaprio's production company.
Oh yeah, what is that one called? Shit,
I think I'm close to it.
But is it
Appian or something?
Is it Blumhouse or Blumhouse Tilt? Do you know?
I don't remember which one of those two it is.
Okay,
it might just be normal Blumhouse.
Because I think Blumhouse is when they're involved in the production.
No, what did Get Out? Was that regular Blumhouse?
I think that was Blumhouse.
Yeah,
it was Blumhouse.
It was Delirium was made by the same studio or produced by the same studio as Get Out.
Gotcha. Yeah. But yeah, no, it just sounds like it's not going to intellectually stimulate you in a grand way, but it sounds like an entertaining popcorny.
Yeah,
sci-fi.
I think so. I think it's a really good popcorn, a haunting psychological thriller movie that has a few great sequences, a few great moments, some really terrible character writing and dialogue between two characters, but like sort of like a getting past that and the movie continues. It's kind of meaty. It goes on for a good long time, but it's not slow.
Yeah.
It's just that it suffers from all of the things that your run of the mill cynic could attack horror movies in general for.
Right.
Weak writing, plot holes, jump scares for the sake of it. But then at the same time, like, I think some of that is due diligence. Like, I think it's a well-done, normal horror piece for around $5 million, if I had to guess. And it deserves the criticism, that surface-level criticism, but also it had some good sequences and deserves some credit, too. It's really, really put me on the fence for what I want to say about it. But I think it's worth, like, one of those VOD, it just shows up for you free of charge.
Right.
I think it's another one of those, yes, please, give me more Cloverfield Paradoxes, even though they're frustrating.
Give me more
Deliriums. Because I like the fact that Topher Grace took a shot on this movie and that I got it for free on Netflix.
Yeah, and there's that time of the day in the week where, you know, it's like 11:30, you can't sleep, you're like, fine, I'll just put on whatever, I'm going to play a game on my phone at the same time.
Yeah.
That, for me, is the perfect place for movies like that.
I think you might even enjoy parts of it.
You know? Cool. Yeah. That's hard, too, when you have like a few scenes that you're like, this is so well done.
Yeah.
But the context is kind of not great, but it's almost worth it for seeing like the cool things that they do at a few points in the movie.
That's how I feel about it.
Yeah. Cool, man.
Yeah. So, Chris, what did you end up watching this week?
So, this week, I watched one hell of a movie.
Oh, here we go.
It's called Altered States.
Altered
States. A lot of people have it on their lists as, like, some of their favorite horror, one of their favorite horror movies or whatnot.
Uh-huh.
This is, like, a Jacob's Ladder type situation.
Session 9.
It's, like, what the hell is... No, because this is... This is, like, what is it doing on there? But it's also, this movie is just bonkers. Like, it's hard to watch. It's very slow at times, but it's so absurd that, like, I don't want people to forget this movie. We need to know that it happened. 1980, Ken Russell film. He's most famous for directing The Devils in 1971. This one is written by Patty Chayefsky, who won... he won like 3 Oscars, one of them for writing the movie Network. Like, just famous Oscar winner. Uh-huh. He wrote this movie and then put it under a pseudonym because he didn't want to be associated with it. Ken Russell, he has said himself that he was like the 20th director attached to the project, and he didn't really have a lot of investment with it. He had a lot of conflicts with the writer and with the main actor. This is William Hurt's like first movie. He's the lead of it.
Okay.
So
let
me tell you this plot line. Let me tell you about this.
Please, Chris, what happens?
He's a professor who is researching in particular the mental state that you get to when you go into a float tank. So this is very
like a sensory deprivation?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So it's sensory deprivation tank, but so it's very contemporary in that sense because floating tanks are so popular now to go in and do if you know you have $100 to just go sit in some goopy water for a little while.
Yeah, if you're a millennial.
Yeah, if you're a millennial. With money. You're blowing all your cash on that and avocado toast.
Yeah, you got an inheritance? Go float.
So he gets really intense into studying what it's like to be, like what your mental circumstances are like to be in a float tank and achieve something close to nirvana. And then he starts like dabbling in, well, what if I do magic mushrooms and then go into the tank? And then he like finds out about doing ayahuasca in South America, goes down to South America, gets a bunch of ayahuasca type substance, brings it back and starts getting addicted to taking that and going in the float tank.
Okay.
But what starts happening is like they show you the visualizations of him getting closer and closer to the mental state that those drugs in that tank allows you to be in.
Uh-huh.
So you have some incredible visual, like bonkers sequences of just like acid trip images being thrown at you.
Okay. All right.
Those are fun and great to watch. But then eventually where the movie goes is that the more time that he spends in the tank on this and on this drug, he's not really achieving nirvana. He's kind of regressing genetically to what like a proto human would be. So like a Neanderthal era, like pre monkey, pre human kind of consciousness.
Dude.
That's just totally primal. And he's taking this as nirvana. Like, oh, if I regress and become like what we used to be as humans, like that'll be that awesome space that I can occupy. But essentially he turns into like a proto human
monkey
when he's in the tank, breaks out of the tank and is running around this like weird monkey figure, William Hurt in like full monkey kind of outfit. There's like a 10-minute sequence where this is like 3/4 of the way into the movie, he just breaks into a zoo and is like interacting with other animals. And then over time, he'll just wake up naked in his kind of present body. But he gets addicted to like going into like what this pre-human state is.
Oh my God.
It's insane. It's so nuts.
It...
but it's not nuts in like we've watched a lot of nuts movies that
God, what?
That have a lot of camp value. Like movies like Pieces are silly and stupid enough that you can laugh through it. This is way too committed to the bit and takes itself way too seriously.
Oh no.
So it's a bizarre experience. I'm glad I watched it. I would not say it's a great movie, but there are definitely some things about it that are super memorable.
Man does drugs, goes into a sensory deprivation tank,
turns
into
like,
a monkey creature,
yeah.
gets his rocks off at the zoo,
wanders around, but eventually like, oh my God.
That's insane.
He just eventually concludes that like, oh no, it's not like a nirvana that I'm reaching. It's just like a pre-state. And because he wants to explore.
God.
He's like, he's doing this academically, you know, and I'm sorry for spoiling the fuck out of this movie.
Dude,
for
I'll never see this movie.
Great. So he's like, he's trying to get more and more closer to like, what is that just primitive state of consciousness that we can achieve? And then he just eventually concludes, it's nothing. There's nothing there. Nothingness is underneath all existence and the purpose for all being, and it's horrifying. So love is the only thing that can allow us to transcend. And like his wife is trying to talk him out of entering the tank again and going back and back, and the movie kind of ends in a climactic him embracing his wife and being like, I choose love, I choose you,
I choose love.
Credits.
Modern human ship.
My modern human body, not my crazy ass monkey body.
Would you still love me if I was a monkey man?
It was just so bonkers.
Wow.
And I'm so glad I got to see it on the big screen at the Royal. They just did a showing of this, which is why I checked it out. But wow, was not what I was expecting when everyone was talking about this movie.
God, there's just moments in your life as like somebody who's orbiting the horror, you know, the landscape, where you just like learn about a new movie and you're like, that fucking exists.
Yeah.
Somebody made that. Somebody pitched it, got money for it, got actors for it, and then made it happen. Oh my God, that is insane.
It just seems so bonkers. And to have these huge names attached to it who instantly dissociate themselves from the project. But
like,
also
like a Simon Barrett, Frankenfish type situation.
I've been excited to watch this movie for years because on paper, dude, it's just a professor like, you know, attempts to achieve nirvana by taking drugs while in a sensory deprivation tank and gets more than he bargained for. It's a sci-fi horror movie. That's what it's billed as. So I'm like, this sounds great. I don't know what the fuck it's going to be, but it sounds great.
And dude, 20-year-old Dave would have been watching that movie like now,
religiously,
like seconds after you explained it. I'm like, hold on, if you take drugs and you don't let your senses take anything and you turn into a monk, oh my God, it's brilliant.
But the monkey aspect would have thrown me for a loop if that was in the description. What I'm saying is that because it has always been sold to me as just a sci-fi horror about hallucinatory drugs in a float tank, that's all I've ever heard.
That sounds awesome.
great. But it's monkeys. That's what it is.
But no, it makes you go back evolutionarily.
Yeah, regress genetically.
Wow.
Yeah.
What a crazy concept.
Insane, man.
Jeez.
It's quite a trip.
There's an episode of Brad Neely's web series, China, Illinois, where they're all college professors. And eventually one of them reaches tenure.
Okay.
And when he loses all zest for life. Like, he just immediately wants to, like, kill himself. And there's nothing to lose. There's no consequence anymore. So what they learn is that there's this, like, secret society of tenure teachers who has this elixir that you drink and it turns you into an animal and you get, like, all animal, like, instincts and stuff, and basically they just get, like, they just bang each other. So all the teachers turn into weird animals in the secret society that they have this elixir just because you get bored as a teacher in tenure.
This is the most insane.
That's so then crazy. Steve, like, he turns into an eagle because he's balding. So he turns into an eagle and he steals it and he just gets, like, super addicted to it. So it's, yeah, basically this weird thing where he takes drugs and turns into an animal and starts to, like, riot at the school.
Embraces and is addicted to his eagle life.
Yeah, he just gets totally addicted to it. It's hilarious.
Maybe a great double feature.
Maybe.
Altered States with that old cartoon now.
Altered States in China, Illinois. If any of our scaredy cats have ever seen China, Illinois, send me a message and we'll talk about it.
Dave loves to talk about it and has no one to talk to about it.
Nobody.
They're out there.
I know.
They're out there.
Somewhere.
All right, we did our scare and tells. We did our This Dave and Chris 3.
I'm sure I talked about some stuff that wasn't about the movie and video games or whatever.
Talked about some monkeys.
So I think it's about that time that we run the old chainsaw and watch this dang old movie.
Hell yeah, let's do it. Cheers. Demons 2.
Demons 2!
You want to kick it off?
No.
I feel like I always kick it off, but I can kick it off.
Okay, you bet you never. I will. You do don't even know how to kick it off. You. I'll kick it off. You don't know what you're doing.
All right.
Here we go. You ready?
Yeah.
Done.
Is that demons?
Done. No, I tried to say that was just as good as we thought it was going to be. Scaredy cats. In fact, maybe bet. No, that was just mumbling, Chris.
Oh, okay. I'll kick it off.
Why don't you kick it off?
How great was it to see the pimp back?
Back in a equally fantastic role.
Mm-hmm.
Although, like, what ended up happening? He got his balls ripped off and that's it?
That was the last we saw of him, right?
Yeah.
A lot of characters kind of fizzled out of the movie that I didn't really feel like we had a conclusive ending to them. Like, what happened to Ozzy Argento? She was in the car. They were attacking
her. Yeah, they just surrounded her and...
That was it.
That's it.
Yeah.
I guess we're supposed to assume that she got destroyed.
Underwhelming.
Horribly. Yeah.
But I do love the idea of taking, like, an actor from the first, bringing him back in a different capacity. I wish they did it with a few more actors.
Yeah, well, I mean, you definitely... It needs to be that type of character, though. Like, a really funny, captivating character who, like, gets their little moment in the spotlight as, like, a leader or as a sort of main character.
Totally.
And then inevitably gets destroyed.
It was perfect usage. But as you pointed out, it's hilarious that he was... the leader of the bodybuilding team because he was one of the scrawniest compared to the beefcakes that they had in that gym.
Compared to the rest of them, he was somewhat small.
Yeah.
And but he had all of the charisma of lead trainer guy, even though he wasn't. And it was very obvious and very funny.
A very, very active apartment gym with a guy leading a whole bunch of them at once.
Yeah. It was a very active apartment. Everything in this movie, very expensive version of an apartment. Everything. This apartment building was insane.
And I love that setup. I love just going from unit to unit and showing just the variety of different people and different evenings that are happening in one location. That was a very exciting way to kick things off.
Yeah, we got that just an amazing kickoff for, like, where the demons show up. And it it felt so similar to the spirit of the first one.
Yeah,
exactly how it kicks off on
also
the stage.
They're also watching a movie in the first one, which also has, like, four teens going through and finding the mask, right?
Yeah.
And then when someone gets scratched in the movie in the first one, it happens in real life just like this one.
Yep, fucking awesome parallel there. Uh-huh. And then the first two big pieces of, like, gore that we got, other than just, like, the green goo and stuff in the first movie, were the claws coming out of the fingertips horrifically and the teeth replacing the human teeth.
Yes.
And we got that happening to her all right in front of the birthday cake. We saw her grab the guy's arm, and then her demon claws start coming out from between her fingernails, which was awesome, and like digging into this guy's arm. Mm-hmm. And then her teeth start, you know, replacing her other teeth, just like it happened in the first one. Just as gross, just as amazing,
just as effective. Oh, God, I feel like we linger even longer on them, which is permissible because it's the second one. You want to see more of it. Yeah. And they do good by not just doing the same thing. They go further with the dog teeth.
Oh, God, yeah. They did it to a dog.
A dog. And then the craziest reveal of that for me was the fact that the demon eyes were in the gums.
In the little as snout. The mouth. The nose, like, pulls back like a banana peel, revealing these little green demon eyes on the front of the dog snout. And now this dog is a mutant demon monster dog.
That just felt like a tribute to the thing. That dog just...
Yeah.
Like, just protruding forward at the mouth. Oh, my God.
And it's just mouth, so they actually did have some kind of prosthetic on this dog at some point, because... Then the dog was able to, like, stand up and walk towards her. And, you know, we saw moments where it was actually the dog.
Yeah.
But we saw that weird facial prosthetic, so it was this weird monster thing.
I know. I was wondering if it was some, like, a chew toy or something that the dog would be biting onto.
Yeah.
So that way when he was going forward, it would look, because we only saw quickly. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah. So, like, if you're doing dog photos and stuff, you have a really well-trained dog, and film is the same, commercials are the same, you train them by putting little things on their head, so you get them used to wearing stuff, you give them a treat, you know, you put something hanging from their nose, they leave it there, you give them a treat.
Makes sense.
Yeah, so they get used to having something on their face, which normally they'd freak out about, similar to like a muzzle or something that you could train a dog to wear in their day-to-day. So you make a little prosthetic that you can put over this dog's nose. And yeah, maybe it's held in the mouth. Maybe it's just wrapped around the muzzle, but the dog knows that I wear this thing for 2 minutes and then I get a treat. They take it off. I get a treat. They put it back on. And then,
smart.
Yeah. And then you can get, rather than just a puppet, you know, who has to be obscured behind something like that little demon that came later from the
game,
you get to see a full real moving creature that just has one point of focus for weird demon-y stuff.
Yeah.
And I found that to be so effective with this dog. What a cool effect.
It was great.
With the dog. Love that.
How did she kill that dog? How did she end up disposing of it?
Oh, shit. That's a good question.
Chasing her around for a little while.
Yeah, and then she gets behind the...
This movie really doesn't overemphasize, or maybe even emphasize enough, just like the finality of a character. Like when a character is being killed or ended.
Yeah, it's sort of like... It's just like contained chaos, you know, like a scene can just end abruptly.
Totally.
Because like most of them are just showing whatever's happened breaking down into its shit components.
So everyone, we see a variety of different people watching the same movie on television.
Yeah.
Right. We see young Asia. We see the young boy. We see Sally. And then.
And like, this is a movie about the first movie.
I don't think it's. Yes. Because they're at the. Technically. That's what we think, is that they're at the place where the theater collapsed.
Yeah.
And they're taking photos and they're looking at one of the demons.
Yeah, like it seems like that's either imagined in the movie this way or an actual thing that place is quarantined or so fucked up that people are scared of it.
Yeah, and they're breaking into it. I really hope that to be the case. And if that's true as well, then I want that car to be
the first car.
Yeah,
the first one.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That would be wonderful.
And demon to be something that they had actually hit. The music that was playing was the actual music that was on in the car.
That would be amazing.
Fucking
and
ideal.
I wouldn't put it past Argento or Bava.
Yeah. After all this, I'm definitely going to go and read through the synopsis like point for point to find out exactly what that movie was.
Perfect.
Because it was a little confusing, like what exactly they were trying to do there. Like what was that movie that everyone was watching? Like,
yeah.
I don't have a solid answer in my head.
Well, it seems like in this world of the demons movies, demons infiltrate and affect by revealing themselves through a narrative film about demons that they just somehow get people to watch, be it at a movie theater, be it at home, in a home television event.
Yeah.
And somehow they get people who are watching it to just inaugurate them into the real world or summon them in by viewing and then someone getting scratched at the same time.
Right. That does seem to be what happens.
So when that it happens is... It's not like someone becomes a demon. This one, we actually have a demon crossing over through the TV.
Yeah, the demon kills all the kids in the movie.
Yeah.
And then
video drums themselves into Sally's apartment.
Which was, that effect was so good.
It was great.
Just like
I loved it. The face pressing up.
The face
static.
Pressing up against like some like nylon screen.
It was incredible.
And then they could project the status or the static image and even the image of the zombie's face. They project that onto the protruding thing. And that's why we got that super weird looking demon-y face.
So it really, like, it looked so, so good. It would look good today. Like, it's such, just,
it did look good today.
Static, yeah. Pushing forward.
It was so good. So beautiful.
What I'm confused by is why the demon is going into Sally's apartment in particular over anyone else's, because everyone else is looking at their screen and they see flat static. Mm-hmm. But the demon is, I guess they just have to choose one point of entry.
Yeah, maybe.
And they're like, or Sally's got a birthday party, a lot of people there to possess and turn into demons.
Yeah, it's got to be. It's got to, like, they were looking through all the TVs, maybe other people like turning their TVs off scared or whatever.
Yeah.
Because then right at the end, we see the guy go and smash all the TVs, but specifically some of them had the image of her running towards, like the Sally zombie running towards the screen. So he smashes them.
At the end there?
Yeah. So you wonder if it is something of an opportunistic thing. Like if you look at it from the demon's perspective, are they looking at a bunch of like windows and they choose one, you know?
That seems to be the case.
Yeah, I think it's maybe more like that.
And in that circumstance, considering that, oh, if they found, like, the movie is of people stumbling upon the site of the first demons movie.
Yeah.
I wonder if that demon that they find too is one of the demons or characters from the first movie.
Oh,
that
shit.
They resurrect and they bring back, because he is the one, that demon who enters the second movie, who enters the movie we're watching.
And then theoretically, oh man, his reveal was hilarious, because she like runs to the door and she's banging on the door. Let me out, let me out. And then it cuts. And she looks over to the static cuts or the screaming sound or whatever. She looks over, he's not there. And then the camera just pans over to the side, like the tiniest little bit. And he's just standing there.
Ah!
Yeah. And then, so at that moment, he infects her somehow. I don't think we see the cut on her, because she looks normal when she walks out.
Yeah.
And then she just begins to turn as she like blows out her candles. And we have just blood fest. It was so satisfying just watching people just get scratched up and destroyed and get their backs torn and stuff.
More teeth protruding forward.
Oh, so good. So good. And how their jaw prosthetics like lined up, how the teeth would like interlock, just all disgusting. They were so good. Mostly like coming forward rather than straight down.
It definitely seemed like they're like, okay, what were the best and most enjoyable effects of the first one?
Yeah.
Let's triple it up for this one.
Well, yeah, they did what I feel like so many sequels fail at doing, is correctly identifying what made it so good and repeating those things. Mm-hmm. Also, the reflected demon eyes, like looking up or down from the stairs.
The like glowy light, like look like headlights.
Yeah, yeah. That effect I remember clearly from the first one.
Of course.
I think we talk about it in the recording. The teeth in the hand from that initial sequence, like the way it plays out very similarly, like the way that a little demon comes out of somebody in the movie. Like we have...
Did a little demon come out of someone in the first one?
Yeah. Well, we had not a little demon, no, but like we had a weird demon thing come out of a person.
Really? I can't remember that.
There was like I think it only happened once. But yeah, one person, the exact same thing happens. They go like start warbling on the ground.
Even and then though the demon just comes out.
A weird, gross demon creature comes out of them. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That was such a strange addition I felt in this one, was that the tiny little gremlin.
Yeah.
Essentially that's running around the apartment.
Yeah. So I think it's like, it's the spiritual successor to when it happened in the first movie, but instead of on a full size character, it's on a kid demon.
So we
get this tiny little
gremlin demon.
Gremlin-y.
Yeah. Which half the time I loved and thought was super fun and entertaining. Yeah. And the other half of the time, I think it might be a problem with editing in terms of showing it too much.
Yeah.
Where we just kind of were lingering on it and it just didn't seem as funny or scary or interesting.
Yeah.
The cuts that were more kind of quick and rapid, when the lightning was going off in the room and she was thrown around and wrestling with it, those were, I think, the better moments of that tiny little thing.
Or having it like it was trapped and it's clawing its way out. Like those were good too. Yeah.
When it gets thrown in the Murphy bed and it's just like hacking its way through.
She catches it in a blanket and it cuts its way out of the blanket, which is great.
Yeah.
And then she catches it in the bed and it cuts its way out of the bed, and then she pours poison acid on it, I guess.
What we all just have on our shelves.
A bottle of skull and crossbones liquid.
Literally.
Yeah. She just pours it in and it starts smoking immediately.
That was a blast.
Yeah. And then it didn't do anything. It still jumped out at her. And, and then boyfriend runs in and umbrellas it through the wall.
Totally.
Which was also a great effect. Like watching its little, the lips of its jaw at the other side.
It's insane. I'm literally just watching the gore of a puppet, but it looked so effective. Like the umbrella shooting through its mouth.
Yeah.
And then it just oozing down itself.
And yeah, oh my God, there's so much to talk about. So also, like, early on, right after the whole party massacre, mm-hmm. the initial party massacre, where they're all laying on the ground, I guess they all start turning, and there's this sequence of shots where people are on the ground, like, becoming half green, and mm-hmm. their claws are out and whatever.
Their veins pulsating.
And she's just, like, screaming and bleeding. Like, blood is just leaking out of her. And I guess that's the moment where that acid blood, like, where it all came from.
Sally originally.
Sally is just oozing it out of, like, ears and eyes and whatever. And it's just dripping off of her and then melting through the floor and, like, getting on people or
felt
whatever.
So alien.
Yeah. Oh,
it's,
totally.
It's allowing other people to get infected in the building. Mm-hmm. It's just going down floor by floor into the different apartment units that we saw earlier.
Yeah. This Casanova downstairs walks out. He's like, huh, is blood coming from the roof? And it melted my fingers off.
So, like, unaffected by beyond third degree burns.
Well,
like,
that's what happened. Is right after you get laid, you're happy.
You're in a good place.
Yeah, whatever. My fingers burned off.
No big deal.
Good day though.
Overall, this isn't bad. Pros outweigh the cons today. Let's just say that.
I've had worse days. I've had worse days.
But oh man, that moment where you're just looking up the spiral staircase, and then the music is there's no music, no score, no anything, and we just see like 10 zombies lean forward, and we just see their glowy eyes
looking down.
And then the camera starts spinning as they clearly start going down.
That was like the counter spin to them running down the stairs.
The most cinematic moment in the movie.
100%. And like, that's kind of what I mean. I feel like there's so many movies that like identify what people liked about it and then just do that instead. Like
either simply repeat it, not build on it like this does its best times.
What did people say they loved most about the cake you made? They raved about it. It's like they said it was sweet. So this next cake, I'm just going to fuck it up with sugar.
Yeah.
Right? But that doesn't make a good movie. That now it's imbalanced. Like with this one, they identified what made it good and made sure to repeat it.
But repeated it differently enough.
Yeah.
And got a little bigger.
Exactly. Exactly. They did exactly right for a sequel, maintaining everything that made the first movie good. Everything that made the first movie good, including all those crazy character actors and, you know, the weird cast of folks in a unbelievably large somehow setting that should be small and confined. Like there's always hallways that they get out into, the kids going into the walls and stuff, elevator shafts.
I mean, this building is actually very underpopulated considering the amount of characters that we met and how giant and how many units and how many floors. Mm-hmm. There's still like either a lot of people who are just sleeping right through this or a lot of vacant apartment buildings.
I mean just judging by the quality of some of these apartments, and I have like 16 rooms apparently.
That's true, they are gigantic.
Yeah, it's either they're so huge that there's 12 of them in this building, or that, you know, no human could afford them.
So while some of the effects I totally agree are expanded upon in a very very satisfying way, there's something about the overall plot and the characters that just weren't, it didn't satisfy in the same way that the first one did.
There's something. I think one of the big things about it is in the first Demons, it was one group of people watching this movie. Everybody was in the same group of survivors, and they got split up and they turned into little cliques and wherever. But like, there was one group of people all trying to survive the same incident. Mm-hmm. And in this one, we've got a bunch of people in the same building, but they're not at all related to one another. And like, we get the bodybuilders downstairs, you know, who then meet up with a bunch of survivors. And then we've got this, you know, this pregnant person. We've got like the people who just banged and like those who meet up. So it's like these very isolated incidents happening inside the same building, but there's the sense of cohesion isn't there. It's like a bunch of isolated sequences. It's like if in an apartment building, if like four or five different apartments were going through a Home Alone event, you know, all with their own version of it, it's not as contained and together as one story with one character or group of characters that you're following.
And I don't think that isn't possible. I think that is just them slightly dropping the ball on the writing. Like, because we spent enough time with all of them, but all that time was spent either just like a family sitting watching TV, not talking, or the bodybuilder saying generic things like, hey, let's hit the showers now. Hey, good job. Blah, blah, blah. Like, we're not actually learning anything about these characters whatsoever. They're just kind of saying silly, shallow lines. Yeah. So I think that's a slightly missed opportunity. We also had some characters that really served kind of no purpose whatsoever. Like, I get that they maybe wanted to parallel the biker gang types that they had in the first one that came in and arrived.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
I'm talking about the car full of people with Jacob behind the wheel who are just driving faster and faster. We cut to like two or three times where it's just that same scene again and again where they're like, don't go fast, you're going too fast. Someone's apprehensive about it. All just to crash into the parents of the young boy who are coming home.
Yeah.
Like they don't serve any other purpose.
Nope.
And we see them like three times.
That's it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and well, they serve like a very, very annoying purpose of annoying Sally in the beginning for some reason that we don't know.
Annoying Sally?
Annoying Sally at the party. She gets mad at the guy who said, yeah, come on over, Jacob.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's like sort of the role they play. And then we're like, okay, so these people are going to show up later. In my brain, that seemed like it was going to flesh out into something.
But it didn't. It did not. There was no point to it. And the same with that guy who was annoying Sally by inviting Jacob. Like he had no other purpose other than witnessing the car crash.
Yeah.
I did like the ambition of that, like of having so many disparate elements come colliding in a car crash.
Yeah.
I love that. But it was just, it had no substance in this.
A for effort, basically, but it didn't work.
A for the idea, but it just did not fully follow through on it.
Yeah, I agree. This movie, I just loved it. I think they just did exactly what a sequel needs to do. But yeah, there is something about like the setting and the way that the stories ended up, joining together, where it just didn't matter where anyone was or why. And like, just one strange thing is at the end of this movie when they walk into that like recording studio theater thing.
Yeah.
I was just like, what? You know, is now are we going to get a helicopter through the roof? Why are they in an auditorium again?
And the answer is not, the answer is just to get them in front of TVs so you can have that final moment of him having to break TVs.
Exactly. Yeah.
But that to me is just like, again, echoing these earlier points of, I just don't think that it's as well written as it could be.
Yeah.
And I think that's just part of it being a rush job. This is like 1 year after.
Yeah. Yeah.
Demons did well. They got to get that sequel out quickly. Mm-hmm. So you do the best you can in the time you have, but a little more time, I think, could have really tightened it up and made it something close to as exciting as the first one. I like this one probably like 2/3 as much as the first one, but to me, it doesn't achieve that greatness.
Yeah. I can see that. For me, it's like, I think getting anywhere near as good as this movie was is just a Herculean effort of like things falling into place and people working really, really hard inside of the limited amount of time that they have. And the final product for a Demon sequel, for like us waiting a year for what the first one was like when we watched it, is like, they knocked it out of the park for how much I could have possibly hoped to expect.
And I really did like the new kind of Demon look in this one. Like they kind of have green faces.
Mm-hmm.
They have like pulsating veins at a lot of points.
The veins are good. They're all wet.
And unlike Dawn of the Dead, which we watched a few weeks ago, it's a consistent green. It's a consistent look from demon to demon. You know what they're going to become and what they're going to look like.
Yeah.
When the mom starts having the green grow across her face, you know exactly
instantly
what this is signifying.
You get it. They did an excellent job with the demon aesthetic. And zooming out, just in terms of the filmmaking, like there were so many beautiful shots. So many great looking sequences.
Oh my God.
They did a great job. They took their, in that way, this seems like they took their time. And
I feel like in some sets, they took their time. Mm-hmm. Like some apartments just look gorgeous. Like there'd be, the lights would be out. They'd be half candlelit. There'd be some moonlight coming in or quote unquote moonlight, but it would just look like such a gorgeous scene that you felt like they spent 6 hours just setting up before they even started filming.
Sure. Yeah.
And then other ones look like they walked on set, turned one light on, and then just started filming.
Yeah.
So it's a weird, weird kind of from scene to scene.
It totally
is. Quality.
And just like to talk about sort of a setting and the energy in it, like that downstairs garage that they were in, like at a certain point, they started moving cars around. And we had like, when the demons finally got there and we got into the shit of it in that scene, we had cars smashing into shit, like walls and other cars and jumping off of the backs of cars and people smashing windshields and getting pulled through them. And like a car would smash into shit and explode. And then three extras would just jump on top of those cars immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was pandemonium in that scene. It was, I can't imagine shooting something like that without like three deaths. You know, it was, it was insane. It was fucking literally insane on screen in that sequence. Just explosions and glass and extras jumping and flying around.
Yeah, it was a lot. And for me, I think maybe it was a little too much at times because I didn't really get a sense of people killed, or like at what point what character was dead, and if they were able to actually hit back against the demons at certain points. That scene really brought to mind, just like the blood dripping reminded me of Alien. That scene reminded me of Aliens, when you have all the xenomorphs first coming over, the explosion.
Oh yeah, that one scene.
Like, it just, it brought that right to mind.
Yeah, I see that too.
And it just didn't feel, because there was so much of a threat happening all at once, I didn't feel, and maybe it's because I wasn't as connected to the characters as much either, I didn't really feel like a sense of terror or dread for any of the characters. It was just kind of carnage.
Yeah, and that's I think what we were seeing in that moment, like what that scene was, is this is where the survivors have in the building have mostly collected and run to. And this is their last stand, and they lost.
They lost so bad.
They got their asses handed to them. And then we get that like scene at the end where all the demons kind of run down and out of the hallway. Yeah. And it just pans over like cars where people are hanging out dead or laying across the windshields dead.
So everyone died except for that couple.
That's what happens in these demons accounts.
Also, the birth and pregnancy are ridiculous. They're for no reason. Like, I guess they want you to think that something's going to come of it. But that's the grand finale. That's the end of the movie.
Ridiculous.
I need a demon to come out of that woman. I need some big bloody explosion.
And just like how easy her birth was, and it was like Popeye squeezing a can of spinach and it lands in his mouth.
Not lingered. No stress.
No stress.
She's standing up. She's walking around.
Her belly is gone.
She's not even sweating.
Nope.
Her hair is just as perfect as it was before.
The baby is 2 weeks old.
That was insane.
Yeah.
The baby is born. Totally fine. Hair. And then the movie's like, the finale?
And then Sally comes back after being stabbed in the belly. Sally comes back, but she's blind, we learn.
Yeah. Why is she blind? We don't really understand.
They didn't explain why that
don't
would happen.
Don't worry about it.
Or why that mattered, or why she like walked in just for some phony scare because he was holding a baby and that's the cheapest way to do it.
Exactly. Like, your mind you're setting up, you're on a new set on that big soundstage. There should be some big grand finale. This is demons. Yeah. We should have something crashing down through, but nothing. It just fizzles out.
Yep. It did. Yeah. And she just crawled in front of the camera and died. And I guess we're supposed, just like you said, it's for that final scare of, you know, she's dead in the real world, but she can come back out through the TV.
By looking down the lens of the camera, she can re-manifest herself, which is kind of cool, but under-delivered. But it really was a letdown of a grand finale. And then to have the fucking freeze frame of just the two of them kind of looking askance, and then credits roll over, get out of here.
Yeah.
A little disappointing, but you're so intoxicated from everything you've seen for the previous 90 minutes that you kind of, without reflection, you don't really notice that it wasn't that bad of an ending.
You wonder if maybe that wasn't the ending. Okay. Maybe we're supposed to get a demon baby ending. And then some producer somewhere along the line is just like, see, I feel like these three should survive with the two with the baby. So we're going to take that demon baby that we've already commissioned, and we're going to throw it into a different scene where it crawls out of a little kid demon. And I wonder if that little demon that didn't seem to fit, maybe was at some point in production, like had eyes at being the demon baby.
That theory a lot, because that would have, like, if you just introduced that small little gremlin demon in that third final act and have that thing chasing the two of them around when they escape the building as the final act, beautiful. Yeah. That would be a wonderful finale. But instead, we just got what we got. Nothing.
You're totally right, man. Like, that ending, I didn't even really think about it. I'm like, okay, now it's over. We can talk about it.
You're hyped up on all the cool shit and practical effects you've seen scattered throughout the previous hour and a half.
As you should be. It's a potent drug that they give you a lot of throughout the movie. Mm-hmm. Of course you're hyped up.
Yeah.
But yeah, it train wrecks at the end there. Not in a good way.
Yeah.
So overall, even though I feel like I've said this like six times now.
Just to summarize the summary.
To summarize my five other summaries, I really, really, really love the sequel, and I think that there was so much potential for it to be bad, and it was awesome.
Mm.
Yeah.
Nice. And I would say I really liked it, but the first one just casts such a strong shadow that it's hard for this one to live up to it. This one is much more flawed, but definitely worth checking out. Yeah. My goodness.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. If you love demons, you're probably going to love this one, too.
Yeah. Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Well, on that note, let's go to some Instagram comments of one of our previous episodes.
Instagram comments.
So we've got a comment here on our Hereditary post from good friend of the show, Esme Graham. Hey, Esme. I love that you guys talked about 30 Days of Night. Heart, heart. I didn't know that Canada had its own Josh Hartnett. Dave's gapped tooth, she's referring to.
Mm-hmm.
So we do not
explain it for those who don't know what's going on.
There's no Canadian Josh Hartnett. If you haven't listened to our 30 Days of Night post, I talked in that one about how I really identified with Josh Hartnett when I saw 30 Days of Night, because like me, he's got a small gap between his two front teeth. And I thought to myself, one day I can make it too.
And I just this past week sent you the poster from Unfriended.
Oh, God damn you.
Which I don't know anything about the sequel, other than the teeth shown on the cover also have a gap between the two front teeth.
You got a whole bunch of screenshots from Chris, like zoomed in on that tooth. You're going to love this.
I think you're going to love the sequel. Also, Brittany, our register, said on Hereditary, I couldn't stop laughing when you guys started talking about Josh Hartnett's. Is this Hereditary post? Yeah, because I got
to say Hereditary. Okay. I talked about it in Hereditary.
Also said on Hereditary, I couldn't stop laughing when you guys started talking about Josh Hartnett's gap, because I do the exact same thing. If there's an actor with a gap, I automatically feel a kinship with what actor they're playing because of my own.
Boom.
So this is a common thing.
It's a real thing.
Everyone with a slight gap between their teeth.
You got a gap in your teeth, you usually don't see it on leading men and women.
Yeah.
And so when you do, you kind of go like, okay, so it's not the kiss of death. It's not a curse. You can still make it.
I'd say Paul Scheer is like the biggest example, right?
Yeah, Paul Scheer. Like
that definitely. Guy's got a substantial gap.
Yeah.
Because I noticed that gap. I don't notice Josh Hartnett's gap.
No, but Josh Hartnett is like, he's what you might call a traditional leading man. Whereas Paul Scheer is not.
Where I thought you were going with that is Josh Hartnett is what you would call a moderate gap. Whereas Paul Scheer is what we call a substantial gap.
A canyon, you made. Yeah. I don't actually want to like riff on somebody for, you know, their appearance, but it's cool that there are people like out in the world like me who have the exact, like, of course, yeah, that's exactly how I feel. Mm-hmm. That's exactly how I feel. I'm sure that's what everyone does, is you identify with the way the main character looks in one of a million ways.
Yeah.
It helps you identify and it helps you feel empathy. And it's a great way to get into a character. Sometimes it's because tooth imperfections.
Yeah. And the history of cinema is leading types are of a very particular physicality, right? So for any kind of expansion of representation, especially ones that we can identify with, that's an exciting thing. And you're naturally going to notice things like that.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's really cool. Like feedback for me to get. Like there's not only can I make it because Josh Hartnett made it, but there's someone else who feels the same way.
You confess this thing out there and now people are responding. To that, and that's feel great. The same way.
All right.
Thanks, Esme and Brittany, are register.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Well, scaredy cats, thanks for listening to another episode of the Texas Dave Saw Massacre. I'm Chris Vandenberg.
And I'm David Stoneborough.
And as always,
chaos reigns. Sally's birthday sucked. Chaos reigns.
Better luck next year.
That's her party. She can die if she wants to.
See you next week.
Bye.